what can we learn from Rust Belt communities that have weathered downturns and a changing global economy and come out looking pretty good? Our next guest says places like St. Cloud, Minnesota, and Green Bay here in Wisconsin may have some lessons for us. Eduardo Porter writes the economic scene column for the New York Times. Eduardo, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, Eduardo, I mean, the phrase Rust Belt sounds in the last bunch of years like bad news. But in your piece, you look at data that shows some cities that might have met that definition are doing pretty well. Can you talk about what kind of indicators you're looking at to pick out these cities?
Well, the indicators that I've looked at in the pieces that I've written about this are mostly about jobs. So success is kind of measured in what are the places where job growth exceeded kind of like the national pattern, and failure would be places in which job growth was lower than what the national trends would suggest. These are not perfect measures of success. I mean, there's also the idea of what are the wages that these jobs pay, and sometimes these jobs are not that great. But it is, you know, it is an important measure. And in communities where jobs have tended to grow, you do see things like family incomes being higher and productivity being higher and so on.
Now, there's a map attached to your piece showing which of these industrial communities had exceeded that job growth marker and which hadn't. And there's, you know, West Coast looking great. Parts of the South are looking great. Midwest, where we are here, hit or miss.
Well, you know, it is the story of the Rust Belt, or more broadly thought of as the Midwest and the Northeast, the old industrial America that kind of like built this country into an industrial power through the first two-thirds of the 20th century. And then in the last third of the 20th century, ran the troubled times through, you know, globalization and competition from other countries, and mechanization and automation that whacked a bunch of jobs. In the South and in the West, it's a different story, right? These are newer industrial cities that we're talking about, cities that just started kind of like growing as the trend of globalization and automation were happening. So you don't have like the big steel towns. These are cities that are coming into their own just as the economy is changing into services, and somehow we're better able to kind of like ride this change.
And in the Midwest, you look at some exceptions, places that did well. And on your list, you mentioned Green Bay, I think it was Grand Rapids in Michigan, and you focused a lot of attention on St. Cloud, Minnesota, our neighbors to the west. Can you talk about St. Cloud a little bit?
Well, St. Cloud, I mean, let me just kind of like frame this broadly. After looking at this for some time, my thought is that a lot of the success has to do with luck. Are you placed on a trading route? Are you in a town that happens to have a university or a hospital? Are you near a big city which you might serve in some way? And I think St. Cloud was benefited from a few of these things. I mean, particularly it's on some important kind of like highways, and it's on an important railway. And so this kind of like put it in a good position to take advantage of trade between different, you know, regions of the United States. And moreover, it had a large market to its to the west that was not served by things like educational institutions or, very importantly, healthcare. And it had, so it could develop a large healthcare industry that served a really large, the sort of like the western half of the state, which did not otherwise have a large hospital to go to. Then to its south and east, it had the Twin Cities. And so to some extent, it also benefited from being fairly near the Twin Cities. It's about 60, 65 miles from them. And there's a confluence of elements that really have little to do with policy and more to do with luck that St. Cloud benefited from. I mean, just there is, to be sure, some policy involved. I mean, they developed some kind of like industrial hubs on their highways. There was some, you know, some zoning policy to encourage industries to set up there. They had an old automobile industry that never really took off the ground, that kind of like morphed into a medical devices industry that was quite successful. So I think there are some policy kind of like instruments that one can use, but mostly I think it was about luck.
Eduardo Porter is with us. He writes the economic scene column for the New York Times. Eduardo, people making policy at state and local levels probably don't want to hear the answer, get lucky, for an answer to their economic woes. And that said, you, in looking at cities around the country, you did find some common themes that you say could point towards strategies that help even Rust Belt cities weather economic storms. What are some of the things you were looking at?
Well, look, the gold standard here is, of course, about human capital and education. Cities that have a more highly educated workforce will do better. Measured by, I mean, the standard measure is about college completion, you know. Cities that have more four-year college graduates are definitely going to do better because they were going to draw more investment, because they're going to also engage in more entrepreneurial activity. But that is unquestionable. But the problem is, what do you do with it? You're running a city. What do you do with that prescription? Do you, you know, it's not like, oh, okay, well, now let's kind of start a university. And you know, Grand Rapids did sort of do that. I mean, part of its success was to draw a university campus and a medical university campus into town. And that was really an important part of its kind of strategy to become a sort of like a bit of a biotech hub. But that strikes me as more an exception than a rule that can be applied across the country. You know, it is the answer. The answer is about human capital.
You also write about the role of, and this might not seem obvious, an obvious connection to people, desegregation, having your communities be less segregated, somehow is attached to more economic success. Why?
Well, I mean, I guess the why is because there's less conflict. And conflict, I mean, segregation measures one or is a proxy for one kind of the possible conflict border. There are others, you know, there are others about, you know, the state of union density and how good labor management relations are. Segregation is an important one, but it's a tricky kind of variable because, you know, cities like St. Cloud have very little segregation because they are pretty uniformly white. And so in one respect, I mean, you could read that in the context of St. Cloud is, well, you are all white, you have very little racial conflict, and, you know, hence the this is conducive to better economic outcomes. But on the other hand, we also know that immigration and diversity are also, and you look at this in the South and in the West, and that's also pretty good for economic performance. So I think that the message is more about how, so even though it's true, it's in the data that segregation hurts economic development. It's also true that immigration improves economic development or is associated with better economic development. But it's also true that immigration often increases segregation because you have neighborhoods that are entirely immigrant versus entirely white. I mean, you have black-white, Latino-white, Asian-white, and so on. You create these segregated communities. So I think that the ultimate takeaway would be that immigration is good, and to the extent that, but if this increases segregation a lot, it can be detrimental because it increases margins of conflict. I don't know if that makes sense.
I want to spend just a few moments on another piece you wrote. What about the idea of a big tax break to bring in a big company like, say, Foxconn in Wisconsin? What are your thoughts on that in our last minute and a half or so?
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, the economic evidence is overwhelmingly against these big subsidies to draw in big companies. Because mostly companies go to places even without the subsidies. Most of the subsidies are just wasted. And even when they're not wasted, even if when they are important to bring a specific company like Foxconn in, it turns out that you're spending more than you're getting. And this spending has to come out of something else, and it tends to come out of school budgets. And if you think that education is a really, really important deal, you really don't want to hurt your school budget. So I see them as a sign of desperation. You know, as a sign of there are really few policy prescriptions that we see out there that work. And so people are trying stuff that is really expensive and probably doesn't really work on a cost-benefit basis, but at least it's going to bring you, you know, a few thousand jobs.
We'll leave it there, Eduardo. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Eduardo Porter. He writes the economic scene column for the New York Times. He was with us to talk about some lessons we can take from Rust Belt cities around the country that have done pretty well over the last few decades.